they stay there, and they say yeah, and they stay there. Cause all I do is win.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to our low-effort, low-quality podcast. This is Liz Brunig. This is my husband, Matt.
Hello, everyone.
I feel like my mic's really hot.
Okay. Do you hear it in your ear?
Yeah.
Could be that your headphones are up. Yep. How about that?
All right, that's much better.
Mm-hmm. So the music I played was not related to the election, which would be a really funny way to start.
This will be misconstrued by history, but...
It is related to my latest case activity. Actually, I have two wins to celebrate, but one of note that people...
I have one, too.
Okay. So longtime listeners will know that earlier this year in April, I joined as a legal representative for Jared Mattello, aka Jared Monroe, aka Not Gay Jared, who was the former producer of Steven Crowder's show Louder with Crowder. And Crowder was going after him basically because he was being friendly with his ex-wife in the process of the divorce, you know, kind of like a siding with her in a way, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh,
sure,
you know,
that happens.
Yeah, whatever. It's like normal shit, right? When you get a breakup or whatever and the friends have to figure out what they're doing. But he was harassing him and using the fact that when Jared left the show, he signed a severance agreement that included a non-disparagement clause to say that, hey, every time you say something negative about me to my ex-wife, that's actually disparagement of me. And therefore, you're violating this clause in your severance agreement from your employment. And I've seen this now a couple of times where people... Like, you would look at this and you say, this has nothing to do with employment, right? This is like a personal beef you have, right? But, oh, but I've got this clause just kind of sitting out there. The agreement that he entered into was from years and years ago, right? So people get these clauses and now what I can't even have like a personal disagreement with you or it's disparate, whatever. You know what I mean? It's a mess and I hate it. I hate these clauses. Okay.
Yeah.
So long story short, Crowder sued Monroe, claiming that he breached this non-disparagement clause. The problem is that in 2023, the NLRB issued this decision, McLaren-McComb, where they said that non-disparagement clauses in settlement agreements are illegal. In severance agreements and settlement agreements, that they're all the same thing, that they're illegal. You can't do that to an employee. And the reason why is obvious, because employees and former employees have a right to disparage an employer in a way that is related to working conditions and mutual aid and protection, right? So if you want to go out there and you're a former employee and you want to say, hey, as long as you're acting concertedly with other employees, say, hey, my old boss was a piece of shit. He treated us like this. He was mean to me this way. They paid me this way. All that is disparagement, but it's also protected activity under Section 7 of the NLRA. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So a clause that just says you can't disparage your former employer, that's illegal, because you can. And the mere existence of that clause is illegal because you're going to read it and think, I can't. And that's not just a hypothetical cutesy point. I have now had the unfortunate experience of meeting many, many people who have these clauses and do, in fact, are in fact coerced away from engaging in protected activity because of them. So I came in and I was like, hey, Jared, I'll help you out, you know, for a price, of course. And I was like, there's this whole thing you can do at the NLRB. Liz knows this because I've been talking about this for, what, 5 years, 6 years?
God, yeah.
I mean, like, all this shit, people like non-disparagement agreements and NDAs, they're all talking about this. There's this thing you can do at the board to, like, blow this up. And you're like, Matt, you think everything can go to the NLRB. You want to see child custody go in front of the NLRB.
Completely true. He does think that.
And I was like, well, maybe, but in this case, it's legit. And everyone was, you're an NLRB fanatic, Matt. But
this is what your haters were saying.
That's what other lawyers have been saying about me.
Other lawyer haters.
They're not haters. They just, you present this to them and they're like, what?
Yeah, okay.
I've never heard of this. This guy? What does he do? Does he, well, he's just kind of, he posts shit on the internet. I don't know about that guy.
Yeah. Was it there was some suit you filed that just said Matt Bruning, an individual?
Yeah, that's when I filed an unfair labor practice charge against Fred Meyer, and the grocery store.
This is what I'm going to make the title of your biography.
Yeah, I think I made it my my Twitter header.
Matthew Bruning, an individual.
Oh, no, I didn't. I intended to, but then didn't.
Anyway. Yeah.
So, a funny thing happened, right? So, he files this lawsuit trying to enforce this illegal non-disparagement clause, okay? Then I come in and file a charge at the National Labor Relations Board where I say, hey, that lawsuit's illegal, that clause is illegal, right? And then I contact the lawyers and I say, look, if you guys continue with this lawsuit, like, all the fees that we incur, you're going to have to pay us back because this is an illegal lawsuit. And the board, actually, I actually have not had this happen before. The region, the Atlanta region, tip off to them. If you can get your case in the Atlanta region, fucking go for it. They actually sent a letter to Crowder's attorney saying, hey, if you persist in this lawsuit, you may incur liability, which that's cool. That's neat. And so they dropped that lawsuit. They just withdrew it voluntarily. We didn't have to enter into any agreement. They just saw, like, shit, this is a dead end, right?
Yeah.
And then they got the hot idea. They're like, okay, yeah, so we can't enforce this contract clause because it's illegal, but maybe we can just say that he did defamation, right? Because that's not enforcing a contract clause. That's just, there's a common law defamation. It's not a breach of contract. It's just a rule that you can't defame people. And so we're going to say that actually these conversations, these two text messages that Jared sent to his wife, that those were defamation. Okay.
Okay.
And this is kind of great, right? Because one, Crowder's a public figure. So defamation is like a real, real uphill battle.
Yeah.
Right. So you get out of non-disparagement, which is basically, if you say anything negative about someone, they call it disparagement and they try to sue you, right? So you get it out of that, and then you go into defamation. And defamation, it's got to be a fact claim. It's got to be made with, like, malice. And then there are all these rules against frivolous defamation suits called anti-slap statutes, right? So the NLRB move pushes them to file this defamation claim, but the defamation claim is clearly frivolous, right? The thing that they are mad about was Jared texting his ex-wife, I just don't want him anywhere near those kids. That really, really disturbs me. And, like, that's an opinion.
Yeah, you know, you can have that opinion.
You can have that opinion. I don't want that. Is that false? Is it false that he does not want them? You know, so this was clearly going nowhere. And a couple days ago, the judge in that case agreed with me, agreed mm-hmm. with the other lawyers on our okay. side, and said, you're right. The judge ordered that the lawsuit be dismissed with prejudice, ordered that Crowder reimburse Jared for $43,000 of legal expenses, some of which will go to me, some of which go to the other lawyers, and required, on top of that, that Crowder pay an additional $15,000 in sanctions, which will go to Jared. So, you know, Crowder lost his lawsuit, pay us $58,000.
Incredible.
Fucking, you know. And he's now appealed it. And what's interesting, the way this works, is the district court order said that, hey, if you appeal this and you lose, you're going to owe another $35,000.
Yeah. Wow.
So it's like, you have a right to appeal, buddy. Go ahead, but push that button. And, you know, just letting you know, you're going to end up paying $35,000. Like, because come on.
Yeah.
What appeals court is going to be like, yeah, no, actually, I think this is defamation. I think actually he stated a claim. It's not, it's going nowhere. So, victory, victory, victory. Fun there. The other thing is Bloomberg. Mm-hmm. My case against Bloomberg, I filed an unfair labor practice charge against Bloomberg LP, which, as you know, runs all those terminals on Wall Street. And they do have that publication as well, which I'm a subscriber to. And among other things, they had clauses that said, you know, workers can't share confidential information, that they can't solicit their coworkers to work for a competitor, and that they can't solicit customers to cease doing business with Bloomberg. All three illegal. Confidentiality clause would be read as saying you can't publicize your working conditions, which you have a right to do. You also have a right to solicit your coworker to work for a competitor as long as you do so as part of a broader course of protected activity. And you have a right to solicit customers of the company you work for to stop doing business with the company as far as a as part of a consumer boycott in order to, you know, improve your working conditions. So this actually was great. The lawyers here for Bloomberg, this is the nicest company I've ever worked with. They just said, yeah, let's do a settlement agreement and fix all the clauses. And then they did.
Success.
And they said, all right, we'll fix all the clauses. And they fixed all the clauses. And I guess the most important thing is the clause saying that you can't solicit your coworkers is now rescinded. And they're going to notify all their employees. And it's great.
Cool. Yeah. Success.
And
victory.
The thing I really like about this is because I've been saying this to some people for a while now. People don't like to file charges, of course, at the NLRB because they think, well, now the employer is going to know that I filed a charge against them. I'm going to get retaliated against, right? But if you're filing a charge against an illegal rule or an illegal company statement, there's a way to take advantage of the filing rules to make it to where the employer does not know who the person who kind of instigated the filing is. So in this case, I have a client. A paying client, but instead of putting them as the charging party in the case, I put myself as the charging party, which you're allowed to do. And so they don't know who brought the charge. They don't know who's paying me. They don't know who the person is.
Oh, cool.
So we get to get the change that helps this worker and helps their coworkers, and the employer never knows who filed it. They know I filed it, but they don't know who the other person
is. Wow, you're going to make yourself like the most wanted man in North America by filing a bunch of unfair labor practice charges on businesses.
I feel like there's probably some reason other lawyers don't do this. It probably seems a little bit sus.
Yeah, no shit, man.
but I feel like it's a great service.
You're crazy for this one.
Because as long as you can get it settled pre-complaint, which like 90% of the cases do, they never know who filed the charge.
I mean, you're doing a cool thing. I don't think there's any question as to whether it's cool.
you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. It's cool. It's, you know, we're all lucky that someone like you exists. And it also gives me pause that not very many such people exist.
Yeah.
You know.
Look, if you go to section 102.9 of the NLRB regulations, any person may file a charge. That's what it says right there.
I'm not saying you've got the law wrong.
Am I not any person? Thank you. A child could file a charge as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, well, don't try it with one of our kids.
I'm going to get a Chinese national to file a charge. And then demand the board claim they're not a person.
Make it, who's that guy who does the insults on Twitter?
What's his name?
Chen Weiwa? Yeah, you should get him to file.
Oh my God, I would love to have Chen Weiwa as a charging party.
Be like, look, this will make my government really pissed off and that nobody will know what to do and it'll be a big mess.
I filed a charge on someone living in South Africa and the board did give me some shit for that. And then I changed the company is an American company. So I was like, look, I'm not filing against the guy who lives there. I'm filing against the company, the employer. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
If you want, I'll give you an address of some other fucker who lives here.
Yeah.
And, you know, that calmed them down.
Yeah.
That they're like, we can't send it to them. Like, you can't. I gave you this fucking email. Anyways, good times. Shall we talk about the larger battles going on?
Did you have audio clips?
Well, certainly. I mean, we'll end the audio clips with the thing that leads us into the election.
Okay.
Yeah. But before that, let's start with this. Jordan Peterson, one of the great public intellectuals of our time, as you know. on the right when he's not crying. You know, just has great insights about how to live your life and everything. He's got so many opinions. He knows things about COVID vaccines now. I mean, it's just, he's all over the board. So he sat down with Richard Dawkins, and I don't know who said this. It's kind of a match made in heaven, honestly. Like, what the fuck is going on? Like, why are these guys, what do they even have to disagree about? But they get into it about whether dragons are real.
What?
Yeah. And Peterson. Peterson.
No, like, okay,
Peterson,
no way.
Peterson takes this really obscurantist, it sounds like a postmodern lefty, like obscurantist that's of the sort it would seem like he doesn't like, but that's kind of where he goes with it, so.
You analogize the dragon fight to fighting Satan.
How many dragons have
Satan.
You overcome in your life?
I'm not interested in dragons, I'm interested in reality.
Okay, so I read a book a while back that described the biological reality of the dragon. Say, well, there's no such thing as a dragon. It's like, okay, is there such a thing as a predator?
Of course.
Well, that's a meta category. What's the category of predator? Bear, eagle, if you're a primate. Fire? Is fire a predator?
No.
Well, it's complicated.
He's sitting in here like, he's like, this is a difficult metaphysical question. It's like when I would, you know, when I was taking metaphysics and it was like, what is a river? There's this path, but sometimes the river changes its path. The water, but the water's constantly different.
Yeah.
And he's like, so isn't fire a predator? If you think about, think of like logically, that's a tough one. He's just like, no.
Richard Dawkins is like, no, not at all.
No.
I'm the guy who does animals and stuff.
Well, if you're a primate, fire? Is fire a predator?
No.
Well, it's complicated because a fire kills you. So is there a worse predator than serpentine, flying, fire-breathing reptile? Is that not the imagistic equivalent of predator? If predator is real, in what way isn't dragon real?
So a dragon is a pictorial representation of the abstracted concept of a predator.
Yes.
But when you say the biology of a dragon, you must understand how that can be misleading.
I don't think the category of dragon is any less valid than the category of lion.
Any less biological?
Well, it depends on your level of analysis.
When this guy came out, I remember I got into some thread where people were talking about him. I'm like, oh, this is just like some weird, like he had some video where he was saying, I will not say your pronoun.
Yeah.
And people kind of got up on it, but like, it's nothing. It's like some weird internet thing. Like, yeah. And then he fucking blew up. And I was just like, what, this dude?
Yeah.
Like, he's ultimately confused.
He's very intellectually muddy.
He's very, like words fucking throw him.
It's all vibes all the time. You know, and he fits perfectly into a fascist tableau, right? Because it's just nothing but sentiments, nothing but vibes. It doesn't surprise me that he fits in with all of that crowd.
Yeah, and there's an aesthetic. Like, you can tell he's just taken by fire-breathing serpentine reptile. Like all that just really grabs him. And then when, like, you're like, well, yeah, but it's like a, this is kind of like a made-up character that, you know. It's like, but how can it be so made up when it grabs me?
I don't understand. I'm trying to reverse psychology in the sense of reverse engineer, like, what is it about the idea of a dragon that's worth arguing for? Like, you know, so you're willing to throw down with Richard Dawkins. You clearly think you can win this. So why?
What are the stakes?
Yeah.
Broadly to and I love also how he's like, I read a book that described the biological reality of a dragon. It's like, I mean, okay. That's his source for it. He goes, there's a book.
Yeah.
And then you can break this down so beautifully from like a debate perspective. He's then got him in a CX period, right? Like, Dawkins has given his case. And so before revealing his case, he's going to try to get him to concede to the building blocks of his argument.
Right.
Right? That's a classic move,
classic move.
I'm coming up on Neg. You haven't seen...
Is justice good?
Yes, it's justice. It is. Oh, interesting.
Oh,
okay.
All right. Writes it down on the flow.
Note, opponent concedes justice good.
You can just flow that straight across.
If opponent argues contrary and next speech abusive to me, so.
It's just such shit eating stuff.
That would actually be a great bit to actually present it that way. It reminds me of when I used to have the case. It was the theodicy case.
Yeah, Leibniz, right?
Yeah. So, you know,
classic of Matt's cases. People know about it. People talk about it.
It's still, yeah, it's on the circuit. It's on fire still.
Yeah.
It was just a total shithead case where you would take a resolution that would talk about like justice. Okay. And what I'm trying to get to is walk my opponent. You know, because they're the affirmative and they're saying justice requires that we make some change in the world, right? Could be any number of things, right? Some kind of policy change, whatever, right? And I'm trying to walk them to the conclusion that the world is already just,
mm-hmm.
right? Without letting them know that that's where I'm headed.
Yeah.
And so we do that by asking them, is God all powerful?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Is God all knowing? Yes. Is God, you know, all just or what is it? Good? All good?
Yeah.
Perfectly good? Yes. Okay. Well, in that case, the world must be perfectly just because if it weren't, God would know it isn't. And he would have the power to change it and he would change it because he's perfectly good.
Yeah.
And just. This is like a fucking argument from like 800 years ago.
Yeah, right? Yeah. No, people have definitely hashed this one out.
But it's kind of surprising. And so you walk them through it. And then I had a couple of times you would snag someone, especially in North Texas, who would go with it and wouldn't know what you're doing. And then you'd just be like, I win. I don't need to do... If he comes up in the next speech and negates one of these points about God being perfectly just or power all powerful or all knowing, then that's abusive to me. I've built my whole case on these concessions he made in the cross examination period.
This case is how I heard of you. I heard of you before I ever saw you.
Uh-huh.
And this case caused such distress for our poor novice debate teacher, that she was in tears over it.
I won this case.
Matt,
I won rounds with this move.
I'm not saying it wasn't successful.
Think about how ridiculous that is. Someone has sit here and spent 20 hours preparing a case about the importance of healthcare, you know, to society and a just society. And I'm just like, hey, if God's all powerful, then the world's already just. So I guess justice is compatible with lack of healthcare. And you would win that. I would win that.
This is a testament to how good judging used to be on the North Texas circuit.
Oh, yeah, these days. I'm sure it's all woke and
golden
shit.
Golden days of judging where they would absolutely vote you up on that shit.
You're like, yeah, no, he did build the R correctly. And
this is a fucking wild west out there.
it's true by the technical rules of how ARGs work. He did build it and succeed in it. And you did concede to the premises of the argument. So there's nothing really we can do.
Yeah.
I'll maybe knock him for some speaks or something, but...
low point win, but...
Yeah. Was the master of low point wins. I guess I should have reflected on some point the fact that judges specifically were like, you win, but I don't like you. Yeah. But that was the consistent message I got from the judges' ballots.
I got speakers' awards, which is the opposite.
No, I'm not trying to do that.
I know.
I'm not... A mark of, you know, look, if you can win a tournament or get close to winning a tournament and be like bottom of speaker points, that's the top. That's the elite. You think, no, you want to win both speaker award and the tournament. No, fuck no. I want the judge to be like, I hated your speaking. I hated your whole shtick, but I got to vote you up. I fucking have to. That's where we want to be.
That's ideal judging.
That's ideal judging. That's ideal outcome. That's out there, ideal performance. And like, yeah, you have your ability to express the fact that you don't like that I'm just fucking around.
Yeah.
And not taking this seriously. Express it. But did I win? I won.
Did anybody ever get mad at you and give you zero speaks?
I had someone write in zero, but remember the minimum was 20.
Right, that's what I remember.
So yeah, I had ballots where it was zero crossed out 20.
What, like in tabs they had?
Yeah, in tabs they're like, they look it over and they're like, no, it's 20 to 30. The range is 20 to 30.
That's so funny to me.
And so you got to do something. It's like, well, I guess then I have to put 20.
Yeah, it said that on the ballot.
It said, yeah.
I've seen a few of those in my day, and it says speaker's points, 20 to 30.
Yeah, I don't know why that was the range, but it's funny also the degree to which the, just like, this is almost a Jordan Peterson thing, like, the number, the fact that you had to write a positive number was a grieving.
Yes.
Even though on the scale, that is zero.
Yes.
Now, I don't know why they made 0-20 and made 10-30. I don't know why. I guess for some mathematical reason, they decided to do it like that. But being like, I will not write a positive number. You're like, but numbers are fake, dude. It's all, that's zero, but it's just our scoring system. And they're like, no. Fuck no.
Zero means a lot emotionally. Yes. As a concept. It does.
Why not negative one? Why not give me a negative number?
Again, you're just dicking with people. they're more integrated into society than you are.
The numbers don't stop at zero. You can give me an imaginary number even. Remember those? We could write pi on that fucking thing if you want. See them tab that.
They're not going to know what to do with that fucking trophy.
How do I put pi into the computer?
Who are they running tabs? It's like people's moms and shit.
Anyways, he tries to walk him to a similar kind of thing where he's like, is this a predator?
Yeah.
Yes. What about this? Mm-hmm. But what about fire? It kills you. And he's hoping that the fucking 13-year-old will be like, yeah, I guess. But instead, it's Dawkins, and he's just like, no. And it's like, oh, shit, my case is dead now. Because when that would happen to me, when someone would not answer the God questions the way I needed to, I would just do a different case.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh, fuck, that case, and let me pull out one of my 20 bullshit garbage cases here and see what else I can throw at the fucking wall.
You say
wall.
Garbage, others say buzzsaw. I mean, you know, maybe there's overlap for you in that category.
Let me get one of the 10 of my 30-second cases and try that on you. What a bizarre spectacle this must have been to watch. Like, I throw out some random bullshit questions. They don't go the way I want. Nobody knows what I'm doing with it. And so then I'm like, shit, that didn't go. All right, I've got another thing. And then I just ask other random questions that also fucking are ridiculous. And then like, ah, shit, that didn't go either. And then you sit down and it's like, what? And then you sit down and none of the questions got, you know, none of your little schemes worked. Right? Nobody went and answered like your little set of three questions the correct way, even like all five attempts at it. So then you just get up and run a normal case. And it's just like, what did you do? What was your question and answer period? You only asked questions that had nothing to do with anything.
Just my own personal information.
That's not the spirit of the debate. You're like, well, I was trying to set up another case. And it's like, what case? What fucking insane shit that's based on is God all knowing? What are you talking about? Yeah, well, you'd have, you know, I'm not going to tell you, but maybe another round, you'll see it.
I mean, you always, it was quite a spectacle. People talked about it. You were a known quantity.
Anyways, we have here the last item, which takes us into our main subject.
Oh, Jesus.
Our good friend.
What's that woman's name?
Joy Reid.
Patty.
Oh, this is Jen Psaki, who Jake of Dan and Jake thinks is very attractive.
What?
Yeah.
Let me see.
He's, you know, into older women, I think. Okay. So okay. You're disagreeing. I wouldn't comment on that because she's a professional in our industry.
Yeah, that just respects her.
Yeah, you know. But
I mean, she's not like a hag. Like,
oh my God.
You know, she's.
Damn.
She's just.
Damn.
You know.
She was a spokesperson for the president. She did a fantastic job.
Saying, it's not like, it's like, it could be much worse. It could be much worse.
I think it's fine. She's on with Joy Reid, who I think is most famous because her old blog was hacked 10 years later to put anti-gay content on it. Remember that?
The Russians keep getting away with that. Why is no
they
one
put
caught
it not,
them?
They put it not just on her blog, her defunct blog from 15 years prior, but also somehow slipped it into the Wayback Machine. Which is fucking unbelievably nefarious.
It's incredibly thorough, yeah.
Yeah, because then you're immediately like, well, why don't I just check the Internet Archive? And like, wow, we got you there. And they actually slipped it into multiple of these Internet Archiving institutions. So, anyways, she, I guess, ultimately was like, I don't think I wrote that, but maybe I did. I don't know. I'm sorry in that case. And people are like, okay, I guess that's fine. Which I actually think is whatever, but, you know, given some of the shit she does, it's a little hypocritical.
Yeah.
She was on MSNBC, you know, on their little panel, on their election panel. And here's what she had to say about the election. And,
And I think it's important to say that, you know, anyone who has experienced or been in the United States for any period of time and experienced this country's history and knows it cannot have believed that it would be easy to elect a woman president, let alone a woman of color. Mm-hmm. Let's just be clear. Mm-hmm. And nothing that was true yesterday about how flawlessly this campaign was run is not true now. I mean, mm-hmm. this really was an historic, flawlessly run campaign. Almost. She had Queen Latifah never endorses anyone. She came out and endorsed.
You know, all right.
She
got that 1995
every prominent
vote.
Celebrity voice. She had the Taylor Swifties, the Swifties. She had the Beehive. Like, you could not have run a better campaign Beehive. In that short period of time. And I think that's still true. Mm-hmm. And I think it's
fucking flawless, dude.
Fucking Democrats, man.
It's flawless. Hey, don't. I mean, that's what I like to see. Flawless, just get wiped the fuck out.
Yeah. She ran that campaign right into the ground. That's how excellent.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
She got Queen Latifah, of all people.
Yeah.
The queen.
Yeah. Yes. These were major figures when I was a child.
She got LL Cool J.
Yeah. Well, Lil' Kim.
Okay. She got Aaliyah from the dead.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah, I had Aaliyah endorsing her.
I mean, more or less. Also, who gives a shit? Has having celebrities ever helped you in the past?
They had hologram Selena reaching out to Latinas.
You know, I said I had a victory to claim here.
Okay.
Here it is. I said it would be Trump all along. I was told.
Okay. What the fuck? I guess we're gonna go with that.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Yeah, every day she was telling me this.
I was it the vibes. The vibes seemed, you know, even here in Blue Connecticut, incredibly Trumpy to me for a while.
What are you talking about?
Laugh it up.
Barely leave the house.
Laugh it up. Do I read? Do I communicate with people?
We sit in Connecticut.
Yeah, but I'm like. I mean, A, I do interact with people.
I feel you.
But also, I read shit that's local.
All right.
You know, you're not the only one who reads the Stanford Advocate.
I hope we don't dual subscribe to that thing.
Yeah, we'll check.
I'm wasting money.
Yeah, I need to follow up with you on that. on subscriptions to stuff.
Yeah.
I could tell. It was in the ether.
Okay. Well, write that up for me.
Vibes analysis.
Mm-hmm.
You can just tell by how things are going.
Now, some notable things that I was watching. here's the thing. I didn't make any election predictions. I actually made one election prediction, from someone who texted me and was like, whatever. And like, normally I'm like, ah, fuck that. I'm not making a prediction. But then I was like, I guess I should, because they gave a prediction. So I guess I have to fucking play along with this fucking charade. And I was like, I guess Trump, because I'm going to go with the gamblers.
Okay.
Because the gamblers had him winning.
Yeah.
And I was like, gamblers probably know. And so I guess I get to claim that I could screenshot that thing and throw it out there. I did put that out, a couple hours before polls closed. But other than that, you know, I'm not in the game of getting on Twitter or on my websites or other publications and telling people, here's how you win elections. Or telling people, here's who's winning right now. I've done some math and whatever. Even back in the day, remember 2016 when I had my polls plus memes minus polls model?
Yeah.
The Matt Bruning election team. The whole premise of the Matt Bruning election team was that these prognosticators, especially ones that are like, I'm just doing math, are full of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And that this is like, it's entertainment, I guess, to like always have like a daily score of who's up, but it's kind of bullshit fundamentally. And so I don't get in that game. But part of the reason I don't get in that game is because it looks like a losing game.
Yeah.
Every person who gets out there being like, I know how to win elections. I'm super confident that if you do this and this and this, the voters will respond and you will win. And then that happens. Some candidate does that and then they eat shit. And then you look like a fool. Right. But other people are not so reserved. Other people have got no problem just hopping in, making these wild ass claims about who's going to win, what the polls say, what you need to do to win and whatever. And then invariably a large chunk of them eat shit. And you know it's going to happen because there's conflicting claims being made with equal amounts of certainty. And that, it can't be the case, right? That person A, who is 100% certain the election is going to go like this because they have this and this reason, and then person B, who is 100%, they can't be, they're both right. And that's different than policy. Because with my policy stuff, one, if any of my policies were ever enacted, you would see they're perfect and that they work great. But it's also the case that no one ever does my shit. Like you've gotten people to adopt it, Bernie most notably, for their campaigns, but I've never been able to pass a thing.
Yeah.
People will argue that I've influenced legislation, you know, and I think there is a good case that certain changes to bills have been made based on stuff that I've written and, you know, like little things.
Yeah.
Little things. But no one has taken... I've had bills introduced that do this. Rashida Tlaib has introduced a bill that just straight up takes my child benefit program and just puts it right in a bill. And introduce that thing. That was pretty cool. It didn't pass, though. So I've never been able to just straight up, here's my thing, politician takes it, introduces it, it passes, and we get to see whether I was right. You know?
Yeah.
And that's just a hard thing to do in policy in general, right? It's always this like small bullshit. It's all kind of muddled up, and you know what I mean? You don't get that definitive outcome.
Yeah.
But elections, there's a definitive outcome. So I'm just watching this train wreck unfold. And the one I took the most note of was this frenzy that occurred after Ann Seltzer released her poll of Iowa. Did you see this?
Yeah, I saw that as it happened.
And one, everyone is like, you know Ann Seltzer. She's like, I'm like, I don't fucking know. What are you talking about?
Never heard that name before.
Yeah, oh, I know all the pollsters' names. What the fuck? What? No. She polls Iowa. Which I guess was a big deal back in the Iowa primary days or caucuses days. But they're like, she's a pro. She's one of the greatest ever. Look at her track record. And so when she put out her Iowa poll, which was like the front page of the Des Moines Register, by the way, like they dedicated their whole like front page to this poll result.
Yeah.
Like a couple days before the election, she's got, my poll says Kamala's up 3 in Iowa. Kamala.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone freaks out and they're like, oh my God, that's such a trend. And like, if we extrapolate that out to Michigan and Pennsylvania, like, oh my, this is going to be a landslide for Harris and, you know?
Yeah.
And then it wasn't just that. They would go out and they'd be like, these male pollsters. I remember seeing tweets like that. These men who poll say that Trump is winning or tied. But now we've got an honest lady who's going to shoot you straight. And she actually knows what she's doing. She says Harris up by 3 in Iowa. Shit like that.
Yeah.
And I'm just reading this and just been like, you're going to eat shit. You understand this?
Yeah.
Like, you can throw this shit out when there's no outcome, but like the game is going to have a winner.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to actually see mathematically, was Ann Seltzer right? Did Kamala Harris win Iowa by 3 points? She lost it by 14.
Mm.
Ann was off by 17 points. Not in the margin of error, by the way.
Yeah, no, yeah.
A bit beyond the margin of error there. What a disaster.
I wonder how that happened.
What a disaster. And so many people, their hopes were piqued by this. There was so much posting about this.
Yeah, people were real high on it.
And I'm just like, I don't know, man. Every other Iowa poll doesn't look like this. Well, because those are men.
Yeah.
They're doing herding. She knows real stats. I'm like,
yeah.
What do you think? She's some sort of fucking savant of like, like she's figured out a new way to do the math of polling. What are you talking about? You call people on the phone. You write down, you know, their answers. You put in a spreadsheet. You do some waiting around non-response and whatever. And that's the game. She waits.
She had to actually call the people?
Not only she hires people.
Oh, okay.
All that shit. But yeah, anyways, so I thought that was funny. But then beyond that, so beyond like the polling game, I've been watching the reactions come in.
Okay.
And I would say, I mean, the two most entertaining people, of course, to watch right now are Matt Iglesias and Matt Stoller. Now, Matt Stoller is always pretty entertaining. He's a passionate guy, you know?
Spicy.
He's a passionate guy. But in this case, I think Iglesias is slightly more interesting to watch because Iglesias kind of got, Harris basically did exactly what Iglesias has been telling Democrats to do. And I'm not saying that's because they were listening directly to him, though a lot of people read Iglesias' newsletter. Like, it's a big deal in the political class. Like, as weird as it sounds, it's true.
I love that for Matt.
I read it. I mean, I think it's pretty good. I would say, you know, take it with a grain of salt, you know, but also because David Shore, you remember that guy?
Yeah.
He got fired for truth. He got fired for posting a study about how riots cause Democrats to lose votes or something, you know, in the civil rights era or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was meant to be, you know, whatever. It was bullshit. He shouldn't have been fired for that. But anyways, he became kind of like this guy that everyone was like, he's the knower, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he actually knows how to get at what the voters want. And the whole bit was he would poll people, like, on issue questions, and then, you know, he would offer, like, a counter argument as well. And then, like, well, whatever poll's the best when you both ask them the question. When you ask them a question where you also include like the counter argument for the issue, whatever polls the best when you do that, that's what people really think. Put aside the method. He had this thing called Blue Rose Research, and it became, I mean, and this is, I know some people have been tweeting about it, and there might be people you're like, how do you know? But I do know people in the Democratic machine world who straight up tell you, like, yeah, David Shore, like, he's kind of the guy. You know, everyone's looking at his stuff. And so Iglesias and him are very close, tied at the hip. They kind of have the same ideas. Most of Iglesias' stuff where he's like, what you need to focus on is like healthcare and abortion. That's all coming from David Shore. And all the stuff about how we need to, you know, heighten our rhetoric about opposing immigration and all that kind of stuff. Like, everything Harris did that kind of tacked to the right, focus on a few core issues that seem popular and then not talk about the rest of the, like, the left agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Don't talk about climate change or reducing fossil fuel consumption. Don't talk about anything that is like contentious. That's a left wing issue. like all that she did, she ran the exact campaign.
Yeah.
That he wanted, and she lost. And that doesn't mean he was wrong, because you can lose for lots of reasons.
Yeah.
It could be that it doesn't matter what campaign you run, because there was that inflation, people, you're going to lose. You could have run anyone saying anything and you were going to lose. And maybe she even lost by less than someone else would have lost by, given the background realities of inflation and people being pissed off about that. Whatever, right? There's a lot of moves you can make. I'm not saying this is a definitive rejection of that. I'm just saying it looks bad. That's why I don't play the game. And Iglesias is having a, you know, he's having a real one today.
So what kind of a real one? Is he like denying this or coping or what's going on?
He's, you know, he's just kind of, I guess I should have pulled some shit up before, but there's been a lot. There's been a lot of content today.
Well, I mean, just like, what's the nature?
Oh, the nature
of
is...
Of the meltdown, if that's what it is.
Well, he's just, you know, like, he's reacting to this feeling that this moderation strategy that he pushed didn't work.
Yeah.
And that people are gonna, that he looks foolish, and so he's kind of trying to be like, well, I'm just, you know, he's basically saying it does still work. It is still right.
Yeah.
Even though it didn't win the election. And but like, that's a tough, it's a tough thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, like I've had candidates adopt my policies, but I've never had candidates just like straight up be like fully adopt exactly what I would want you to say and how you would want to comport yourself, you know?
Yeah.
And then just watch them lose. But anyways.
Well, I'm
what
curious
have you got
to
about
see.
The election?
Oh, I mean, I only have questions. I don't have any answers. You know me. My way, my preferred way of navigating politics is just to absorb vibes and understand the conflicts between groups based on that, you know. Excuse me?
What?
Sorry.
You didn't like that I looked at you?
No, you looked at me and messed with your earphones, and I wondered if you were telling me to talk into the mic.
Carry on.
Anyway. You know, to basically be able to put yourself in the mindset, you know, or the shoes, however you want to look at it, of someone, you know, who is on the other side or a different side or whatever, you know, and then just trying to get an impression of what they feel about politics. I think impressions and feelings and sort of animal spirits explain like 98% of politics.
Mm-hmm.
And that people being rational and actually sitting down and like doing the math, fully breaking down each policy, et cetera, I think that's pretty rare.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be as simple as, I simply don't like the idea of war. It doesn't sit well with me. I haven't like done any math on what it does to economies or death tolls or anything, but it just doesn't sit right with me. And there's a candidate who says they don't like war either, and I'm going to vote for that candidate. You know, that's not irrational, but it's still more emotional and vibes-based than, you know, coming at it from a more global perspective.
The other problem we have here from a sort of failed prognosticating is, you know, and this is very inside baseball. I realize this. This is me and my own little fucking universe, but I don't know. If you listen to the podcast, maybe think that's interesting.
Well, I wasn't done talking.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, now I don't remember. But I was just going to say that I can't even begin to get a sense of what's going on with the rightward shift. I don't know. I don't know what's driving it. I don't know. I talked to a lot of right-wing friends today, trying to get their explanation for what happened. And, you know, the answers were mixed. I don't think there is a single reason.
Well, yeah. Well, I guess we'll see what dominates. That I guess is the position we're in right now is who's going to come up with the thing that we all believe about the election, right?
Yeah.
Which is always kind of a foolish thing, you know, because how often is that actually the thing?
Yeah.
Right? Remember, the thing we were supposed to believe about the Trump 2016 election was it's white lash.
Yeah.
It's all just white lash.
Yeah.
And then Trump has, like, consistently across the next couple of elections run up his numbers with non-whites.
Yeah.
You know? And now you don't really see that so much. You know, like, it's lingering. And I'm sure in, like, private conversations and stuff, that's still a big, big element of it. But it seems like the discourse has been chastened a bit away from that. Like, you still have some diehards out there, like Nicole Hannah-Jones or whatever, who are still playing the hits. But, you know, is that really the case? Is it really the case that the reason why Trump won Latinos in Michigan is because of white lash? Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
You know? By a large margin, by the way. He won Latinos in Michigan.
Yeah.
But the other issue is, so the money on the sort of left of center, like policy kind of world, a lot of it flowed into this like antitrust competition policy, anti-corporate, you know, that kind of shit. FTC, we're going to block mergers and we're going to do consumer protection and we're going to, you know, whatever, right? And I mean, one way to trivialize it is like they, in the last couple of weeks, for whatever reason, they've thought it was cute to tout the fact that the copyright office made it so that McDonald's could repair its own ice cream machines instead of having to use the company that makes the ice cream machines.
Yeah.
Because they were like, that was part of the process before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's fucking revolutionary.
Yeah.
if you hear these guys talk about it. But here's the problem, right? These people kind of got to run a large part of the government for the last 4 years. They got their FTC chair. They got the they got their people in DOJ, Cantor. They obviously had influence in the copyright office. They had influence in the Department of Transportation, even in the NLRB, right? Like the whole thing kind of tilted in that direction, right? Anti-monopoly, competition, anti-bigness, whatever, right? Which I don't want to be critical of it, but like that's where everything flowed. Whereas before, if you think about like the left, even the same personalities, the same human beings were energized around things like nationalizing health insurance and, you know, stuff like that, Green New Deal, whatever. Now it's, you know, making it so that Google is not a default search engine on the iPhone.
Yeah.
You know, like shit like that, which yeah. I find to be kind of trivial. And in a way I would look at it and kind of be like, man, this is sad. Like even in that movement, like you guys had these big ambitions and now you're doing like little shit like McDonald's ice cream machines and like whether Google's the iPhone search engine, like it's, what are we doing?
It is sad.
And instead of them being like, yeah, you know, that's just the realities, they go the other path where the kind of small bore bullshit that you can actually do, because it's them doing it and their people doing it, they blow it up and say, this is actually the revolution.
Yeah.
This is exactly right. This is fighting corporate power, actually. We reduced credit card late fees from $32 to $8. That's it. That's how you win elections in America.
Yeah.
That's the kind of shit they were doing. And they got behind specific candidates like Osborne in Nebraska. And like they even got to write a big part of the Harris platform, clearly, right? Yeah. All the price stuff and that's it.
Yeah.
Like, and I find it kind of depressing, like I said before, that if you try to be like, what is lefty econ stuff? What are they all about? Right. And you can kind of go through the recent history and you can say, well, you know, we had the Bernie period with Medicare for All, Green New Deal, all that kind of stuff. And then there was also this sort of offbeat, like, job guarantee, MMT thing that sprung up, that died. And then in its place, we have this shit, this antitrust, anti-bigness shit. You're like, okay, that's what we're doing now. But whatever, that's where the money is, that's where the people are working, that's where the action is, that's where the movement is, that's where it's all at.
Why is it? Why is that?
Well, I mean, I think I've got my own opinions, but...
Well, that's what I'm asking for.
I'll get there in a minute. Point is, they got to do their thing, and they still lost.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's an uncomfortable outcome. And so what Stoller's been doing on there is just kind of being like, actually, you know, it's always like, actually, populism wasn't tried.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, Iglesias, actually, moderation wasn't tried. You know, like, everyone who pushes it, they're just like, nah, actually, it wasn't fully what I was
Real
saying.
Real communism has never been tried.
Yeah. And it's like, and that's, again, I'm not, it may be unfair. I'm not saying, you know, but, like, there was this story almost where they were, I swear to God, dude, I remember having this conversation with a guy on there where he was like, Lena Khan, the masses love Lena Khan.
No.
I'm like, they don't know.
No way.
They do not know who the chair of the Federal Trade Commission is. Are you fucking out of your mind? She's like, no, they do. Very important. I mean, you are cooked. Like, you. What are you talking about? Your brain is so saturated in this little niche. Less than 1% of people will tell you who Lena Khan is.
Yeah.
And you guys are like, we're going to run on Lena Khan.
We're going to.
Guys, and I mean, this is not to, but like, I'm more realistic about it, right? I have a fucking newsletter, NLRB Edge, where I cover NLRB minutia.
Yeah.
I do NLRB minutia. I get a little excited about NLRB minutia, but I'm not going to go out there and be like, the masses love the fucking general counsel of the NLRB right now.
I subscribe to NLRB Edge. Because I thought, oh, interesting, I'll see, you know, Matt's thoughts and stuff. But it's just the most boring shit imaginable. It's so dry. And it's all shit I've already been told.
It's exciting. I think you have to distinguish between kind of like the daily updates, the one that have the dates in the headlines.
Yes.
And then the ones that don't have the dates in the headline are things that might be interesting to non-autistic people. The dates and the headlines are only for fellow autists.
Well, I absolutely support your right to create for your community.
But, yeah, so they shit on that.
They did not win all future elections because of Lena Khan.
It did. Lena Khan did not put 10 extra points in the dim ledger, unfortunately.
So, what do you think? You know,
obviously. Oh, why on the antitrust? Why are they the thing? I think I've said this before, but to me, this is just my model, and I know this is very self-serving. I think the key, there are three basic keys to egalitarianism, right? Number one is the welfare state. Number two is the labor movement, specifically a like labor movement that's going to get to huge density and thereby shrink wage differences between different kinds of workers, right? Called wage compression. And then number three is socializing wealth in one form or another, whether it's social wealth fund, whether it's state-owned enterprise, prizes, whatever. We're trying to spread that wealth out. Those are the three things. The problem is that these things, like these, it's hard to do these things. They generate a shitload of opposition, right? Taxes, people don't like. The welfare state, people don't like. Businesses don't like the unions. People may not like unions. Like, it's just hard. Like, these, I would argue, in a way, precisely because they are effective, they like pinch people in ways that cause opposition.
Yeah.
But people also love economic, like, populist stuff. Like, people do. Like, regular people, you like the idea of, like, we're going to do something for the little guy, and we're going to finally take on those corporations. They like that.
Yeah.
So the key, the genius here, can you find a way where you can use that kind of rhetoric that's very socialist adjacent, you know, about the big guys, and we're going to help the everyday working man, and can you use that rhetoric? Is there a set of policies where that rhetoric attaches, but you don't have to do one of those three things, the welfare state, the unions, and the socializing wealth? Can you find something that does that? Antitrust. That's their whole movement.
Yeah.
It's like, we're a movement that does all, that can access all that language, that doesn't actually do the three big things, or any of the three big things.
Yeah.
And I think that's just so attractive.
Yeah.
And in a way, it kind of proves its point that, like, that is actually something you can do.
Yeah.
It just turns out that what it looks like is making it so that McDonald's can repair its own ice cream machines.
Yeah.
And regulating the airlines so that, you know, when they kick you off a flight, they give you like the full refund.
I thought Ralph was behind some of that.
He is, but there was some shit they had to pass some rules, whatever. Okay. But it's just like, that's fine. That's all good. But it's like, these are little tweaks.
Yeah.
These are like, it reminds me of the you know, the kid that got killed on the street here, that dangerous intersection. And they put up all these plastic bollards and like changed the flow of traffic so that it wouldn't happen again.
Yeah. Dear God. Yeah.
And I'm like, that's great, you know, but like, that's just people just kind of being like, this intersection's fucked. Like, why don't we fix it? Is that left wing? Am I doing populism now? You know what I mean? Like, what is this? Was it right wing when fucking McDonald's couldn't fix its own ice cream machines? Was that right wing? And now we're doing left wing where McDonald's can fix its own ice cream machines? Was it right wing when they didn't let Apple like sell earbuds as hearing aids? But then they changed the rules and now they can kind of go in the hearing aid market with their earbuds. Is that now? Because that was the other thing they're touting. It's shit like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I fucking go for it. If you want Apple, I don't care.
Which part am I supposed to be okay with Apple going into the hearing aids market or upset about it?
Don't even get me started on that shit. It doesn't hang together because it's literally just like issue. It's like small, tiny little niche topic to small, tiny little niche topic.
Yeah.
So, and precisely because there's no ideological valence, so you just kind of present it and then you look at it and you go, I think it would be better if we did this. But there's no framework there, except you're just kind of looking at it and be like, I think this overall would be better for consumers and maybe workers to some extent if we did this, you know? But they want to make it into a broader framework.
Yeah.
They want to make it seem like they do have a broader thing they're saying. So they'll articulate these broad principles that justify a particular action they're taking in a particular niche market.
Yeah.
And then when we get to the next niche market, like we've moved on from earbuds and now we're on to fucking ice cream machines, they'll go the reverse.
Yeah.
So like the Apple earbuds is a great example because I remember one of the things they're supposedly so mad about, and this is Lena Khan's like law school note. This is supposed to be one of the foundational texts, is these companies that operate in a lot of different markets. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they have monopolistic power in a particular market. But they're just kind of, their tentacles are everywhere.
Yeah.
And Amazon's supposed to be the example of this. Amazon does not have any kind of monopoly in retail.
Yeah.
Like broadly defined. Online retail maybe is a little bit different, but retail broadly defined, I mean, fuck, I got retail stores all around me. You know? They don't probably do even, you know, 3% of US retail or whatever. And the same for all their other stuff. Now, cloud, there may be more, but like their video streaming services, there's plenty of them. Netflix, Hulu, Disney, right? Whatever, all the shit they do, there's a lot of competition, but they're big overall.
Yeah.
Right? Whole Foods, which Amazon owns, well, there's a lot of grocery stores, right? Mm-hmm. But they don't like that. And they're like, this kind of thing, because having your tentacles in this industry makes it hard for you to deal with this industry. And like, they'll use an example. One that they've used recently is someone was trying to sell a documentary about working conditions and unionization at the Amazon warehouse. Remember they recently unionized?
Yeah.
And it was like, well, obviously we can't sell it to Amazon. You know,
yeah,
like the Amazon Prime, and there we can't do that.
Yeah,
and like there's your problem. There's your because they're in both, because they do both the warehouse and they do video. Now you're seeing how these things interact and why that's a problem. If they only did one or the other, you know.
Yeah,
you're like okay, but now let's go back to Apple. What they saw in the hearing aid market, I know about this because I used to write about this. I was actually on the bleeding edge of changing this regulation, believe it or not.
Anytime something happens in history, just look for Matt.
I'm just saying, at a previous job I had, I wrote about the hearing aid market and regulation. I legit did. And anyways, the problem is that these hearing aids cost like $10,000, some crazy shit like that. And you have to go to these audiologists. And the main reason it's hard to like get new hearing aids in is because the audiologists have to prescribe the hearing aid. But, you know, then they kind of, there's this sort of like cartel like aspect of that, you know, and whatever, right? And so but we have all these new innovations with like headphones and shit that you can basically use them like hearing aids, certain kinds of hearing aids, right? They've got all this functionality. So great. Like, let's change the rules so that instead of people having to pay $5,000 for a hearing aid, which like poor people can't even afford, they can go buy, you know, the super pro version of like Apple earbuds, which costs like $500.
Yeah.
And we can make it all work where you can market it as a hearing aid replacement so that people know that like, yeah, this will kind of do what you're looking to do.
Yeah.
That sounds great, right?
Yeah.
But then I'm like, well, wait a minute. Doesn't Apple have a streaming service called Apple TV? What if I wanted to do a documentary about Apple earbuds as being bad hearing aids? Now I can't sell it to Apple TV.
Yeah.
Just like the Amazon thing that you're going on about. So you're celebrating this, but the Amazon thing's a problem.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing. It's a big company getting into a new market.
Yeah.
Anyways, I don't mean to go on. I did have this argument about the ice cream machines as well. I'm like, it seems like this is bad for mom and pop ice cream makers. The fact that the McDonald's ice cream machines are down all the time seems like it would be good for the local ice cream shoppies.
Yeah.
Now you're just going to let McDonald's crush them by having their ice cream machines working all the time.
It's true.
You know, you can't beat that fucking $1.50 cone.
What did they have to say to that?
I didn't raise it. I know I should have, but I was trying
No time like the present to tweet that out.
I might write a piece about it, but I did think that was, you know. Because the thing is, this is a great example where they want to say it's about big guys and little guys. Well, clearly McDonald's is a bigger guy than Taylor ice cream machines.
Yeah.
But Taylor ice cream machines is using a quirk of the U.S. copyright law to make McDonald's use it to repair the machines.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's just public policy anyways. Like, that's just a form of regulation, these copyright laws. And now they're changing it. I don't know what the difference is. But, like, this is not a bigness thing.
Yeah.
This was a copyright law problem.
Yeah.
And the little guy was able to use the copyright law to fuck the big guy.
Yeah.
You know? So what does that tell us?
Is it right wing or left wing to think selling the earbuds as hearing aid replacements is okay and good?
It's a great question. They're saying right now that's left wing.
That's left
to say that Apple can now compete in the hearing aid market, despite the fact, again, that in other contexts they're saying allowing these companies to spread out into a bunch of different markets is actually right wing.
Right.
But like I said, it's really just like market by market by market by product by product by product. It's like a list of like, here are 30 like little irrationalities that have developed in some kind of product market.
Yeah.
Where like the laws kind of came together in a weird fucking way and caused this result that we don't really like.
Yeah.
And that we didn't really contemplate. And I found like 30 of them and here's how you could fix each of them. And then you like go and proceed to fix them. But it's just kind of all over the map. There's no real, it's almost like good government.
Yeah.
You know, like the ice cream thing is such a perfect example because it was a quirk of copyright law that allowed them to do it. It's like, oh, well, that's not really what we intended with copyright law. We're trying to protect like artists' work. We weren't trying to make it to where you couldn't repair your ice cream machine, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's what it was. So it's like, okay. Yeah. So you know what I mean? It's just like, like I said, it's like the intersection where the kid died. It's like, well, okay, yeah, there's a problem with this intersection. Let's fix it.
Yeah.
It's just like fixing little shit. But then they're like, no, this is actually aggressive, anti-corporate. This is how you fight the big guys. This is populism. And this is what's going to win us elections.
Yeah.
And it didn't.
I thought there was something more concrete to it than that.
That there is in the books a more meaty thing. But then that's not what happens.
Yeah.
That's not what it actually looks like when they're implementing it.
Yeah.
Like, I think, in a way, like, a more sympathetic story is something like, they had this thing, we're going to go in and break up the big guys, deconcentrate the market, it's going to be big shit. And then, like, they couldn't really.
Yeah.
They could block some mergers here and there, but, like, that was it. And so then they went on to, like, essentially consumer protection type stuff.
Yeah.
Which is, like, small bore stuff. And that doesn't really have anything to do.
Yeah.
With, except to be like, this is good for you.
Yeah.
This is good stuff. We do good stuff. We're pro good stuff here.
Yeah.
But I shouldn't have gone on about all that.
In your opinion, what accounts for Kamala's loss? If you had to, you know, give a top three factors or whatever that you think killed it. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I hate to get in this game because I want to kind of be like, this shit is indecipherable. There's too much stuff going on. No one really knows. You know, she only campaigned for like 100 days. Is that a problem? She was never popular. Like, as a person now, I think she was a better choice than Biden. Like, Biden had super low favorability and was not functioning, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think the Dems made the right choice in a sense. Now there was some, well, could they nominate someone else? I don't know. To me, that seemed like a reasonable move, but you know, there's a reason why she did got like not a single vote in the 2020 primary, you know?
Yeah.
She's not a popular figure. So, you know, you could talk about that. The thing a lot of people want to talk about in the econ world is inflation. Mm-hmm. And this is very self-serving in a sense. Because what you get to do is you get to say people are disgruntled about economic things.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing they're specifically disgruntled by is not really our fault.
Mm-hmm.
It was inflation, but there was a global inflation that occurred after COVID. People were spending down their pent-up savings, and there were supply chain disruptions, and, you know, every country experienced it.
Yeah.
And that wasn't really our fault. And to the extent that we contributed to it, we did so by doing the stimulus, which also, you know, drove GDP growth. It drove employment growth. So we were actually doing something good.
Yeah.
To the extent that we... So that's like a perfect thing. You know, like, oh, they're mad at this thing that wasn't our fault. And if it was our fault, we were actually doing something really good, but they just don't get it. People suffer from what's called nominal anchoring. I think that's what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
So like you get used to a price, like just as it's written.
Yeah.
And then if it goes up, like it's just it's like emotionally difficult.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, well, the raspberries were $1.99. Now they're $2.99.
Yeah.
This happened once when those cashews that I bought went from $6.99 to $7.99.
Uh-huh.
And I noticed it and I was like, damn, that's a big leap. It's a big leap all of a sudden. That was unrelated to this. That happened like 8 years ago. So it's like, yeah, so people just, they stabilized by that, even though their wages were rising and GDP was growing and, you know, we had the best macro economy in the world or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
But... with that all said, as much as I feel like it's a little bit of a cop-out, I don't think it's unreasonable to say that obviously there was some resonance where they could add up essentially 4 years of inflation. And instead of saying, well, yeah, well, the inflation rate went up and then it came back down, you just add up all the inflation rates across 4 years and you go, prices are 25% higher. And people are like, damn. Because it kind of sounds like taxes.
Yeah.
Kind of sounds like they imposed a new 25% sales tax or something.
Yeah.
And like, that would be wild if you did that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, that's kind of how you can pitch it.
Yeah.
It's dishonest, right? So like when Vance or Trump pitch it that way, they want people to believe that they're going to bring prices back down, that they're going to cause deflation.
Mm-hmm.
But like they're not. And if you did, it would be a huge problem.
Yeah.
So prices are not going to go... back down,
yeah,
nominally. But that's kind of the thing you could tell. You could kind of be like, they essentially impose this 25% inflation tax and we're going to repeal it. And I think a big chunk of people probably, you know, the sticker shock, and they want to bring that price back down, and it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But something you can sell them on.
Yeah. I mean, that seems as likely as anything to me.
I don't know what affects these elections. You know what I mean? But I've had this critique now for a while that, like, look, the Biden period was very, very shaky. You know, you could talk about the stimulus, you could talk about employment growth, but then on the flip side, you have the high inflation, you have the high interest rates. Maybe those aren't his fault, but then there are things that are, at least to some extent, his fault, or at least there was no effort to try to extend any of the COVID welfare state programs. So when you cut all that back, that was really hard on people, especially people at the bottom. Poverty spiked, you know, child poverty doubled. Like, it was pretty brutal. They cut all the extra unemployment benefits. They cut the child tax credit. They kicked 20 million people off Medicaid rolls. They resumed the student debt payments. They ended the eviction moratorium. Like, you start adding that up, you know, that's some real suffering that occurred out there. That can't be great.
Yeah.
Even if you want to say, but the median real wage adjusted for inflation increased by 3% or whatever.
Yeah, your guess is as good as mine, you know, better. I have the sense that people didn't like her and didn't trust her. And that they just didn't turn out. You know, I saw some poll analysis suggesting that she lost votes over Gaza, which is interesting to me.
Yeah, so I think she definitely did, but none of that seemed decisive.
Yeah.
Because I was looking for that, and I was like, that'll be an interesting narrative, but, you know, it's not like she got crushed so bad that wedge of votes didn't matter.
Yeah.
Right? Like she definitely lost a ton of votes in Dearborn, right?
Yeah.
Because that's kind of how you can do this. You can try to do the exit polls, and that's so-so. But the best thing to do is to find these precincts that are like, 80% Muslim.
Yeah.
Or if you want to analyze like Latino voters, here's a precinct that's like 95% Latino.
Yeah.
That's, you know, kind of a clever way around the fact that we don't track people's individual votes, so we can't attach a vote to an ethnicity or something like that.
Yeah.
So there, like Dearborn, you know, she did fucking terrible in Dearborn.
Yeah.
But
it wouldn't have saved her.
No.
Damn, man.
So
we can blame Obama in large part.
Well, the other thing is, we're talking about what the Harris and Biden, what they did wrong, quote unquote, but do we have some sense of what Trump is doing right? I mean, that's the weird thing here. Like, what is he? His shtick is funny, right? It's amusing, but it's still kind of bizarre.
Yeah.
Like, even when you watch him speak, it's like so just all over the map. Very focused on weird personal shit and vendettas he has.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait a minute, you're running for president. What do I care about? You have some issue with this celebrity or something. And like, what are they pitching? I mean, is it just the immigration bit?
Yeah.
You know?
I heard immigration from a lot of the conservative people I talked to today.
That stuff is so weird. Like, it's not like we've had the crazy immigration for the last 4 years, you know?
They think that there has. So they've been fed information that...
Okay, yeah. So if you lie about it, but like, this is tracked, right? There's this, official data on this, I believe.
They say that there has been a spike in illegal immigration. I have no idea whether that's true or not.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That's what they say. I'm not telling you what I think.
No, I feel you. But there's an element of that that's fake insofar as it's so abstract.
Yeah.
They're like, it's up. It's like, it's up. Do you, have you had, are you having negative experiences with immigrants? Like, that's what I would like to see almost. Or it would make more sense if someone was like, yeah, so a bunch of immigrants moved in and it was real bad. And then I'd be like, yeah, I don't know, but maybe you shouldn't take that one experience and extrapolate. Yeah. You know, like, then we'd have that discussion. But you don't even get that.
Yeah.
Except for weirdly, they tried briefly to turn those Haitian refugees into that. Remember yeah. that? That was their moment where they were like, we're going to try to do that. And that didn't really work.
Yeah.
I don't know. It didn't look like it. They accused them of like eating cats, which is fucking not true.
Yeah.
So, but like, other than that, what are these bad? And I guess maybe this is just the Texas in us.
Yeah.
Like, I grew up around immigrants my whole life.
Yeah. Illegal immigrants.
Illegal immigrants. Everyone who lives in my dad's neighborhood is an illegal immigrant, basically. Unless, you know, they happen to, you know, be a second generation. You know what I mean? Like, they were born, and so they have... Well, like, that's the thing. And it's just fucking normal people. I don't know what to tell you. Like, I'm not saying that maybe elsewhere in the world and other kinds of immigrant communities and whatever, there could be some kind of culture clash. But... we're basically talking about like Mexican and South American immigrants. And here's what I know about them. One, love Jesus.
They love
Jesus. Oh my God, they love Jesus so much.
It's truly beautiful to behold. It really is.
I mean, it is funny, right, that the Republicans hate they love Jesus vastly more than natives. Natives, but you know, not Indians.
Native Americans who are not Indians.
natural born citizens or whatever. Yeah. Than non-immigrants. They love Jesus vastly more than that.
Absolutely.
Even here, when I go on these late night runs, I run by this like tiny ass like strip mall church at like 11 o'clock, packed with Latinos.
Look.
They love Jesus. I know that. Two, they fucking work. They fucking bust ass. And it's kind of remarkable. How much they bust ass. There used to be a TikTok. Remember I used to show you those TikTok videos?
Yeah.
The whole thing was just like people being impressed by how fast these like Mexican immigrants do like general contracting work. Like fucking like jogging and like just, you know. Anyways, it's just like they're very religious, very family oriented, do a lot of work, don't do a lot of crime. Like crime rates among immigrant populations, much lower than crime rates among native populations on average. And it's like, so what's the big deal? I mean, I don't mean to emphasize too much the love Jesus part, like I'm some kind of, you know, but like...
But you're speaking as someone who is presenting this to a hypothetical Republican. Like,
right.
What don't you like? They love Jesus, they work hard, they're like family-oriented, they don't do as much crime. What's your problem with this?
They're not on benefits, because you can't even get the fucking things.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's kind of chill. Also, they... good food. I don't mean to go too cosmopolitan there. I understand that's a more of a conflicting thing, but I'll tell you definitely you've seen it. The food options in my dad's neighborhood.
Quite good, actually.
Quite interesting. Interesting stuff there, I would say, prior to, you know, the better than average.
Look, I guess it's just racism, right? I mean, it's, you know.
But where does this all come from all of a sudden?
People have all kinds of complaints. They attribute, you know, problems they attribute to immigrants. It's just that this is all bullshit. They're like, they take our jobs.
So the immigrant share of the U.S. population is 14.3%.
Okay.
And I mean, that is up from prior years.
Yeah.
But... what do you want it to be? 10%?
There you go. It's up from prior years. Matt says...
well, the aggregate is... so this is the foreign-born share of the population.
Okay.
So if a bunch of people immigrated like 10 years ago, they're still here. So they'll show up in the percentage.
Yeah.
But...
well, whatever data, if any, is attached to the claim that there's been a spike of illegal immigration... I can't imagine it's been subject to rigorous and thorough analysis inside the Republican community. I don't know. It doesn't, when you're like, your neighborhood is going to be full of people from Latin America. I'm like, all right, sure. What's the problem?
So, even where we're even here.
Some people have to live some places, so.
Again, like, I could see a potential, but I just had, like, even where we're here, the schools, I mean, you can see the demographic data on the schools because they publish that, are like Latinos are the largest group in the schools.
Yeah.
Whatever. What the fuck do I care?
Yeah. You can definitely talk to the parents of other kids in this area and get the sense that that motivates the private school.
Does it?
Decision.
Why?
That's just how people are. They're racist, as I said.
What is the stereotype we're running away from here? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think they reflect like an underclass, right? Like these are poor people who do the menial jobs in richer surrounding communities. And the people who are, you know, not rich enough to live in Darien or Greenwich or whatever, who are white people who live in Stamford, are, you know, trying to get that Greenwich and Darien experience. That's what they associate with excellence.
I guess.
You know, and it's just racism straight up and down.
I guess.
I don't know. Like I said, usually I can put myself in the vibe set of another person and feel what they feel. But I'm lost on this one. Who saw Trump 2024 and was like, hell yeah, I'm definitely going to fucking turn out for that? I mean, but people did.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
So, something I'm missing.
Turnout's down.
Turnout was down across the board or just for Dems?
No, it's down a lot, I think. Let me pull up the results. Well, I guess we won't have all the votes in yet, right? But, yeah. I think turnout was way down. Let me see if I could find some solid indicator here. But there's still a lot of votes out there, so I guess we need to wait.
That's
a
rough map, man.
it's whatever. These maps are bullshit. I don't know they're bullshit, but it's like if you... So this election, what's interesting about it is Trump won. He's got right now, it's 51-48, essentially.
Yeah.
Trump. And that's what it was last time for Biden.
Yeah.
Biden was 51 and Trump was 47.
Yeah.
And right now, Trump is 51 and Harris is between 47 and 48. So it's the same outcome.
Yeah.
In popular vote. It's just flipped.
Yeah.
Which, you know, whatever. It looks like a bigger deal than it is. Like, unless you also wanted to be like, well, Biden smashed Trump. But actually, the story there was like, it's very close.
Yeah, it was tight.
So, anyways, I guess that's what we got.
Yeah. Well, what do you think Democrats should do next?
Well, what I'm looking for, of course, I mean, you know, not to say that there's going to be an open Dem primary.
Yeah.
In 2028.
Are you running? You should.
I'm eligible to run, I think.
You should do
it. You need to be 35 to be president, right?
Yeah.
I'm 35 right now. Okay. Yeah, I could run.
I would fully support you running for president.
Remember when Kushbaum was going to run?
Yeah, that would have rocked.
God, that would have been so good. Yeah. To get him. Like, we just wanted to get him on the stage.
Yeah.
In a debate. That was the whole goal.
Yeah. Well, we should start a campaign for you with that single goal. And
I don't, but I can't do what Kushbaum does, or you know, on that level. Now, maybe it would be interesting.
No, I just think it would be interesting to see someone treat a debate like a debate.
You want me to actually prosecute it that way?
Yeah, I want you to do it like a debate.
I'm sure I would tilt in that direction a little bit, be a little bit more offbeat about just like hammering the fucking point and arguing with someone.
I mean, this is what people pay the bucks for in the, you know, in the content market.
Yeah, but it's like Trump in the debates was very entertaining.
Yeah.
But it wasn't debatey.
No, he was
But I can't do what Trump did. I ain't got it in me. But you're right. It could be interesting. But what I'm looking for is who are we running on the left? It's a little early to put that out on a Twitter thing, but like that's really the question for me. What is going to be our left-wing candidate?
AOC.
AOC. And is Bernie going to basically make the call? I mean, nah, he's not running, but is essentially like we got to figure out who Bernie wants to get behind? Because he probably has the power, right? To kind of clear, to anoint the next left candidate, but I don't know who that would be.
Yeah.
AOC seems, you know, I guess, you know, but she's kind of ticked some people off.
Yeah.
And yeah, and is it going to be someone like AOC or Bernie or someone who you think like this person's going to compete, or are we going to be back into the like Kucinich days? Which is whatever. I'll still work for that person, but that's what I'm looking at. I'm getting on with whoever the left standard bearer is going to be and trying to get some policy in.
And then become general counsel of the NLRB when their administration takes power. Can you imagine? You would go crazy with power.
No.
You would be drunk with authority.
There's only so much you can do. I mean, this is the thing. Like, I could not do anything more than Abruzzo did. There's 100 people who work there in D.C. who could do that job. Because you're ultimately, you maximize within your constraints. And like you hit those constraints pretty quickly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you got to, the shit you do, you can't, the circuit courts might push you back. And, you know, the NLRB, you also have a budget. Like, you can't go totally wild.
As in most things. I imagine you could do more within your constraints than other people could in the same constraints.
I do have some secret ideas about the NLRB.
You know, so maybe that's your ultimate destination. We'll see.
I think that's what would be the best use for me.
It's hard to say. Welfare czar.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
But that bores you now.
It's because it's a solved problem.
You answered the question.
It's solved, but I feel that when people want to implement, I'm still interested. But I'm. What more is there to say about how to build the correct welfare state? I've already said it.
You could only think errors at this point.
Yeah, I could just repeat myself.
Yeah.
But yeah, something like that. But also, I don't want to really work in administration. I just want to feed policy. So that's what I'm looking at. And hey, that's like 2.5 years away. That's closer than you might imagine, the next primary.
Yeah. We put all our Christmas decorations up.
Yeah, I mean, we's a little overstating.
Some people.
The involvement put others.
The decorations up, and some people put the ornaments on the decorations that were put up, which is equally decorating, even though it is not hard.
The division of labor is I put up everything, all the outside lights, which are extensive, both the indoor trees, yes, there are two, all the other indoor decorations, and then the kids and Liz put ornaments on the trees. So I would say my stuff is probably 8 hours. 9 hours.
That's all putting shit up outside.
And your guys' stuff, 20 minutes.
No, not at all.
30.
To put this in perspective, I cannot put the trees together because I'm too small. Mm-hmm. And I also could not do the stuff you do out front because I simply haven't got time or patience for it.
Okay.
So it's inaccessible to me.
Yeah, in that way it is, certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm not complaining.
You're definitely complaining.
No, I'm not. I mean, the weather was nice, and I put my headphones on. It's certain things, you know, like pretty chill, putting stuff up. It's neat, like you get a nice finished product. Everything fits really, you know, you're thinking about these electric circuits and getting, there's a lot of like strategic element to getting all those things lit up, you know. It's, you know, interesting challenges. The bush lights are complicated because you got to arrange them in a certain way so that the plug is available for the next bush.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of like little things like that where you basically trying to make it so that the circuit will keep going.
Yeah.
Because it's not like everything that you have. Like, there's probably 50 individual, maybe not that many, maybe 30 individual plugs.
Yeah.
But you can't just run all those to the house.
Yeah.
So you're trying to string them together, you know?
Listen, I am for indoor activities. That's what I am for. Inside the home activities and procedures.
Weather was great. I mean, I actually think it went well. I finished it. I went on a run. I do think is the best year we've had of it.
Yeah, it's definitely the best year so far.
I think I'm getting better.
Yeah, you're perfecting your technique over time.
Faster too. Get it up faster. So
yeah.
More efficient.
Yeah. It's incredible.
But yeah, Christmas time is here.
Yeah. I asked Matt the other day if he would celebrate Christmas if we weren't together, and he said no, probably not.
Well, in terms of decoration, certainly not. And I mean, if in what other sense? Well, I don't know. Like, who am I giving gifts to and getting gifts from? I don't know.
Dark. Rough. But fortunately, Christmas time has come for the Brunigs, and we're all in good cheer. People texted me this morning being like, are you okay? Like, there had been a mass shooting or something. And I was like, yeah, I mean, the Democrats had a bad fucking night, but what am I supposed to be doing? You know what I mean? I got to get up and go to work.
Yeah, some people take it really hard. I mean, it's not good for me in a real personal sense because of what I do at the NLRB.
Yeah, I know. I know. That sucks.
But that's very niche, you know?
It's big-hearted of you to be so broad-minded about it. You know, not just how it'll affect you, but others.
Right. But then you see people for whom it'll have no effect get real exercised. And I guess that's nice if they're doing it out of sympathy for others. But there seemed to be something else going on with their attachment to it, you know? I guess it's kind of like people who get real emotional about their team, their football team losing or something.
Yeah.
And you, like your dad, you know?
Yeah.
Don't mess with your dad, honey.
Yeah.
The Cowboys lost again.
Yeah, it's my whole childhood.
Okay. All right, I'll stay away from him.
My mom being like, Daddy's not mad at you, he's mad at the Cowboys. It was just so terrifying.
Yeah, the kids have picked up on that a little bit because obviously they've been over there when... Yeah. And yeah, they've asked me before, like, what's the deal? Like he yells at the screen and stuff.
Yeah.
And they're just like, what the fuck is that? Jane, especially. I'm like, so I don't know, people, you know, because they're like, we watch you watch TV and you don't ever yell at the screen. I'm like, I don't know. Some people do that, I guess. That's a thing. I've seen it on TV. I understand
doing it in like a party setting.
Yeah, in a social way, I guess. Yeah. Even then, you probably wouldn't, you know, it just kind of like reacting like, oh,
yeah.
And then the popcorn flies and you slap someone on the back and shit.
Yeah, that's exactly how it would go down.
But yes, by yourself or only with your family screaming at the TV.
Screaming profanity at the TV.
There's a like 8-year-old watching wrestling element to it. Where you're just kind of like, what's the deal, dude? You're an adult, right? I'm not saying don't feel something about sport if you want it that to be like a real, you know, like when people, you know, there's Boston Red Sox finally won the World Series again and everyone's real emotional and they're, you know, but it's like when you hear those people, they're like, I used to come to the game with my dad and, you know, it's like embedded in this like social thing. You know?
He's a slave to his emotions.
But that's not this. You know what I mean? It's also kind of like, I mean.
Are you so sure that's not this? Like, maybe the feeling is just there's no way for him to mediate it.
But is it connected to something social?
Oh.
Like where he's, you know, because that's when you'd find the people really emotional about their teams. And maybe this is the documentarians are really selective about it, but it's always kind of like they're their fandom is connected to something social, it's connected to their parents or connected to their friends, and like that's part of we're all rooting together, and this meant a lot. It was a formative thing in my childhood, and it reminds me of my dad or my grandfather or my friends growing up, and we used to watch all this and whatever.
Oh, my dad just really likes the Cowboys. I don't know how he got into it, but he did. And it's not like my dad's family were sitting down and enjoying an evening of football with the family, so.
Yeah.
Who know? I don't know how he got started on that.
Like I said, all I think about is wrestling. I'm going to be like, you know this is fake, right? It's like, it's not fake in the same sense, but it's this is entertainment, dude. Like, the players don't actually dislike one another. I mean, occasionally, but like, you know, whatever. This is like a business.
Yeah, they're doing their jobs.
They'll do the thing. Next year, they'll play for another team. The coaches all switch out. I guess the owners kind of have some lasting personalities. But, and hey, get into it. Get into it. Have fun, you know? Get into the Rock or the Undertaker, you know?
But, yeah.
But don't, as part of getting into it, we suspend reality a little bit. We suspend our knowledge of the stakes being, you know, what they really are.
Yeah.
But you don't want to go too far with it. We still also go, but this is still fun. This is just fun. It's entertainment. It's interesting. We get invested. We want them to win, but if they lose, we feel a little bit of something, but we don't throw shit and swear.
Yeah.
And act violent.
Yeah.
But not true of all people, I guess.
Some people have really big feelings, and they simply can do nothing about them. They can't mediate them in any way. They can't subject them to any scrutiny or even arrest behavior action on those feelings. Some people just completely fucking lose it, you know, at the smallest thing, and they just kind of suspend control over themselves completely. And I can imagine that's gratifying if you're the one doing it. But at the same time, it also seems to me like being in a permanent state of meltdown, which sucks.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. Ultimately, you have some sympathy for
somebody who's always having a bad time.
Mm-hmm.
You know? On the other hand, that's about it, actually.
All right. Well, I mean, this has got to count for two epis.
Yeah.
It's hour 42.
All right. Enjoy, guys.
Adios, mofo.